Hey, this is Rob Liefeld, and you're listening to Matt, Ian, and Paul on the McSauce Podcast.
Welcome to episode 326 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello!
Doing his best Silver Hawks guitar shredding, and Matt Cassell.
Hello.
It is Monday night, June 6th. No slick rhyme, because June 6th doesn't rhyme with 1944. Because
it's also June 8th.
How about that? It is June 8th. Also, 8 doesn't rhyme with 44. Tonight, we are going to talk about the DC Diamond split. DC Comics is splitting with Diamond Distributors. And then we watched a couple new Looney Tunes videos before we started tonight. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And if there's a little time, we'll do a little what you've been doing. And I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of twists and turns and hijinks throughout the show, as there always are. But before we get into the hijinkiest part of the show, we do housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
Hijinky Scoob!
Check out McSauce at McSauce.com. You can hit us up on all the social medias. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, all the places that you normally can find people and talk to people on the internet. We also have a Patreon. We are doing Patreon exclusive episodes for our fans there. So you can, if you listen to this show and you say, man, an hour of these idiots arguing with each other about toys and nonsense isn't enough, you can go to our Patreon page where you can find us arguing or talking. I think we're more civil on Patreon. I think we have a very even tone about that. Coming up this week, we're going to be talking about Star Wars. We take listener requests and do special episodes for our Patreon subscribers. It's only $5. And we...
So this week's episode, which should already be available if you're listening to this episode, is what each of us would do if we had the keys to the current Star Wars castle. If Disney comes in and says, Paul, Ian, Matt, each of you make your own thing. That's what the current Patreon episode is. I suggest you listen to it. It's a very good episode. Very, very good episode.
Yeah, check it out. And if you are checking it out and you subscribe to our Patreon, we will send you over a survey on how you can get your own exclusive tailor-made episode. So it's only $5. We promise to give you two extra episodes a month, but we've been doing 4 a month, so you get essentially a double dip of McSauce if you're a Patreon subscriber, so you can listen to the main show, which is generally what you've been accustomed to, and you can also listen to the Patreon exclusive episodes, which are a little bit different than what you've been hearing from us for 5 years, 6 years at this point.
Seven years.
A very long time. So we do some different things. Solo episodes, like I said, listener exclusive ones that we let you direct the episode. So
yeah, definitely sign up. You're getting a lot more content for your buck. And it also gives us a chance to spread our wings for ourselves and for you, the listeners. So, earlier this week, I guess it would have been last week being that it's Monday night, DC Comics decided they are splitting with longtime distributing partner
Diamond Comics Distributors?
Yeah, sure. I don't know a whole lot about it. I saw a couple headlines and was like, ugh. How is this really going to directly affect me? I don't care. But Matt was like, no, we should talk about it because you buy a lot of DC books and that's who's dipping. out of the industry standard. So maybe this is going to affect you more than you think. And Matt makes good sense. So Matt's going to walk us through just exactly what's happening and how this is going to affect us as comic book readers.
Yeah, Diamond and DC have had a relationship now for 25 years. Diamond, and with that relationship meant that Diamond Comic Distributors had the monopoly on comic book retail distribution market for the last 25 years. They distributed Marvel Comics, DC Comics, all the independent comics,
Image, IDW,
everything, Dream everything. Wave. When comic book stores put their orders together, they do it through one distributor, Diamond. So they put out one order a month, and then over the next 4 weeks, every Wednesday they would get a new shipment from 2 months previous of the shit that they ordered.
So being a fan of organization and efficiency, I love this current outline. I love that comic shops only have to go to one place. I don't care if it's a monopoly or a billion different people trying to distribute comics. I feel like Diamond Comic Distributors were the only people that were like, yeah, let us do this. We really want to do this. Is there a clamoring in the marketplace for platinum comic distributors?
This is hilarious because this highlights Paul's
ignorance.
Lack of knowledge, because this model is not the preferred model of A, independent comic publishers, B, comic book shops, because they are at the mercy. If you only have one, a monopoly means one person dominates the market. If you only have one way to get your comic books, sure, efficiency, maybe, but you're at the whims of that comic book publisher or that distributor as to what they feel is the most, what is most important to them. So say if there are if one distributor had a deep catalog of back issues, which from what I understand back in the day, there was one called Capital City, which was another distributor that did put a premium on having back issues available quickly and at a moment's notice, where Diamond was like, let's get those new number ones out there. Let's get the newest stuff, the hottest stuff. But Capital City put a premium on independent comic book companies as well as those back issues. So variety sometimes, Paul, is the best thing for a vibrant comic book community or any kind of community.
I love that your impetus for doing research and having knowledge is to shoot me down on any Monday night.
It absolutely wasn't, but I...
It just comes with the territory. You knew this knowledge before you found out what we were talking about tonight.
No, I did. I happened to... Shout out to Cartoonist Kayfabe, because a month ago they talked about this particular thing. They interviewed Stephen Bissett, who was the artist on Swamp Thing, and he eventually went on to self-publish, and he talked very specifically about a convention where Capital City essentially went out of business because they were trying to make a deal exclusive with Image, and that fell through. And I think that at the time DC had already saddled up with Diamond Comics or Diamond Distributors, and Marvel was sort of straddling the line. Will they only go with Diamond or will they go with other publishers? So this was not specifically to spite you, but I also was buying comics at a time when there were multiple distributors and there was a little bit of a difference. I was a little kid, I didn't know, but it's not just to fuck you over, Paul. I happen to listen to people whenever they talk about historical facts.
No, we went into tonight, we were talking about what we were going to talk about tonight. Matt was like, hey, DC is splitting from Diamond. And I was like, who could ever give a shit? Who could care? And I was in a terrible mood this morning, and I needed to come around. And Matt, I apologize for being a little short with you in the text thread this morning. I was having some issues with PayPal. I feel much better now, and I came around. But yeah, I'm I'm completely in the dark. I haven't paid attention to Capital City or Diamond or like who's doing whatever. Like as far as I'm concerned, I go to the shop, my books are there. Ian, you said that the Diamond was sort of making things complicated to an extent with comic shop owners, but what Matt had said earlier was that comic shop owners are not happy that things are changing, because I think comic shop owners have gotten accustomed to just doing one thing, and now they're going to have to do multiple things.
Yeah, and I think to Matt's point, I think that a lot of the people that are owning comic shops now likely are people that have been owning them for maybe 20 years or 25 years, or maybe they came in right after the boom of comic books happened whenever. So maybe they don't know anything different is what I'm trying to say. Maybe they only know Diamond distributors, yeah, and this is how it goes.
Yeah, I think the majority of comic book stores probably only know the Diamond way. And that's got to be scary for a lot of retailers that haven't really done it any other way. If suddenly you're being forced to change the way that you do business for over 30% of your inventory, then that's going to be a little bit unsettling. And the significance for the consumer here is that I'm reading that. So the way it's going to work is DC is partnering with three separate distributors. So there's not just one, like with Diamond. Now it's three different distributors. There is there's Lunar, which is actually run by the mail order retailer DCBS. And then there's UCS, which is run by the giant comic book store chain Midtown Comics, which is technically a competitor of all the other stores that they're going to be distributing to. That's for regular comics. I don't know why you would use one or the other if you have to use both, but that's for new comics. Then they're using Penguin Random House, the book publisher, to handle the distribution for all the trade paperbacks. So comic book retailers may have to use up to three separate distributors for their DC content, and then Diamond Comics for everything else. So now they're going to have to fill out four separate orders, potentially, a month.
It's bonkers to me that if DC's bringing all of the distribution in-house...
No, they're not bringing it in-house. They're using different distributors.
It seems like these days everyone wants to pull everything in-house. I expected when I, heard, DC's going to start doing their own distribution, like, everything would run through DC. You want DC back issues, you want DC number ones, you want trades, like, everything's going to run through DC. You go to one place, you go to one website.
They have substituted Diamond for other distributors. What's weird about it is how quickly it's all happening. This is going to take effect within 3 weeks. You would think that Diamond would have had some kind of contract in place, multi-year agreement with Marvel and DC. You would think. But for DC to just back out of the working relationship like that, just on a whim. And I believe that they were able to use... I think there was probably some kind of clause in the contract, because with Diamond distributors shutting down for a couple months during the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, that's what opened the door for DC to maybe experiment with other distributors. And that's what helped get them out of that situation with Diamond.
So on the surface, I know I don't want to do extra work.
Right.
So the idea of having to go through, Penguin for this and DC for this and whoever for this. Like, initially I'm like, ugh, that's so much more stuff to do.
But Paul, you champion ease over expense a lot of the time.
I do. But is this going to go back to Ian's earlier argument for multiple avenues of distribution where more things become available? Is this going to allow DC to have more control over releasing different back issues, different trades, different products, where Diamond seemed to just, on the surface from what you had said earlier, just be focused on the new number ones coming out, you know, the current hotness. Maybe this allows for a neater variety for stores to bring in. Maybe once they settle into the new ordering system, this works out. Like, well, I don't know what the cost is going to be from, like, you know, shop to shop, but...
Yeah, so here's
maybe
the thing.
Maybe there's some positives.
I'd imagine that Diamond could dictate things even as much to how much DC prints, like print runs and things like that, where maybe if you get a different distributor or a few different, you can
do lesser
print runs.
I feel like that was based on orders. That's why orders were put in 2 months in advance, and then they would print to order with overflow. Actually, I think... I'm pretty sure this is accurate. I think DC was always pretty good about actually overprinting and having more reorders available as opposed to Marvel. Now, what makes this maybe not such a great deal is, A, it's going to actually, the profit margins using these distributors is going to be smaller for retailers than... it was through Diamond. So Diamond gave bigger discounts on the books to retailers, which means the books are still going to, you know, be $3.99. That just means retailers are going to make less money. I don't think a lot of comic book stores are actually like doing gangbusters business. I don't think the comic book industry, especially after the pandemic, is in a particularly healthy place. There are certain chains that do well and they feel like they're kind of invincible. But I would say for your average standalone store, this is not good news for them. And I think also to your point about it maybe not being a monopoly anymore, it kind of still is a monopoly. It's not like it's not as if DC is still working with Diamond in any capacity. It's just they've replaced it with another distributor that now has a monopoly on DC stuff. And what some people are speculating what this really means is some people think that this is a really strong push for DC to inch even closer to the digital world. They're trying to go digital because they can make more money. They don't have to print anything. You know how much it costs to print stuff versus just releasing it digital? Your profit margins are so much higher in the digital realm. And also, a lot of people are also speculating that this is going to force Marvel's hand to come up with some kind of distribution model, because essentially people are expecting this to effectively put Diamond out of business. So when that house collapses, all the remaining... publications that were still being distributed through Diamond are going to have to find new publishing or distribution houses or self-distribute, which people are speculating that's probably what Marvel will do. And they may not be in a healthy enough place to do that. I don't know if DC has some kind of clause where, like, non-compete, where Marvel can't come to Midtown Comics and be like, can you put out Marvel Comics too? That I don't know. But from what I'm reading, as much as it wasn't great that there was a monopoly with Diamond, because Diamond, for all their faults, you know, it was still if you were going to have a monopoly, it wasn't the worst company to have a monopoly. But they were severely stuck in kind of old-fashioned ways of doing things, whether it was technology-based, the way that you put in your orders. I know that there was some weird compatibility issues with, like, the way that you would work with Diamond to put in your order. Like, I know that it wouldn't work on Max for the longest time.
Get
just
out
crazy
of the city.
Shit.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know if it does to this day. I know that
you can only use Internet Explorer to order.
A friend of mine that wanted to get a computer for his shop couldn't get a Mac because you couldn't put your order in on a Mac. It was crazy. I assume putting your order in now is web based, but for a while I think it was you had to do it through like their proprietary software, but. I think ultimately what this means is lower profit margins for direct retailers, and based on DC's, I think we can agree that DC has pretty much led the charge in the digital realm ever since like the New 52 launched. I think they made the most big time push on digital.
I would think that they made the most. They've had the most advertisement of digital, but honestly, for my money, Marvel and Marvel Unlimited is the best resource.
When it all started, DC was the one that kind of led the charge in the digital realm. I remember, Marvel joined Comixology after DC. DC was already in place there, and also there wasn't a day and date where when a Marvel book came out, it was going to be online on Comixology. And when the New 52 started in 2011 with DC, that was when if a DC book got published, it was also available digitally. I think that's cool. I like it. Ian, you like it. But a lot of purists and a lot of retailers especially didn't like it. Because
it's weird whenever we talk about purists, because in a way, like, I think that, you and I guess we're not purists. I guess we're...
I don't think we
sort
are
sort of
really
like we've evolved with the nature of our jobs and the fact that we're artists and we have evolved with technology.
Yeah, well, we create digital artwork.
Yeah.
We don't create paper and pencil art really anymore. And, part of me feels bad about it because that's what we grew up with.
Sometimes. But I think that in one way that I'm thinking about this is maybe DC has been coming to the realization that the way that they can keep their business alive, because let's be honest, while the heroes from DC and Marvel Comics dominate the movie screens and television, they don't necessarily make those companies a ton of money from the foundation of what those characters were formed at, which is the comic books. That's like the comic books don't make a ton of money for those companies.
Right.
So maybe this is an effort to, I know that a while ago we were talking about, is DC not going to publish comic books anymore? It might've been, I don't know, maybe it was 6 months ago, somewhere around.
Yeah, I remember this.
But maybe this is an effort to streamline the business, get a better deal on distribution, and ensure for the long term that these comic books will be published through DC Comics.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I guess what that does is that means that DC's profit margins are better. But that's not going to increase sales. Like changing your distributors isn't going to make the comic books better.
Is it going to affect us as fans at all, do you think? Like, negatively affect you knowing that?
Here's the tangible effect it's going to have on us. I think when we go into a store, because I think this move is viewed mostly negatively by retailers. But when you go into a store...
And rightfully so.
Yes, I agree. I definitely don't think DC is the hero here. When you go into a store...
Maybe they're the anti-hero.
It's more likely that, like, now, that you might not find that DC book you're looking for as opposed to before, just because... With comic book retailers not making as much money on DC books, there's not as much incentive for them to carry it. They may push Marvel's shit more because now there is more of an incentive to sell a Marvel book because they might be making $2 on every Marvel book as opposed to $1.50 on a DC book.
Do you think that they maybe get a break from an alternate, like from like they have two different or a few, three different distribution models? Do you think that maybe like
two for comics,
like is a Vertigo book going to like make higher margin? You know what I mean? Like is something that is under the Penguin distribution model going to be cheaper, more expensive than that than the other option?
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
The cover prices are going to stay the same,
right? But yeah, if DC's not subservient to Diamond at this point, like, and if Diamond's like, well, fuck you guys, we're just going to pump these Marvel books, like, I would think DC's not going to make this move if it's not going to work for them. So, like, I would expect DC to be like, yeah, do what you fucking want. We're just going to bump up our own shit because now we can. Because now we are essentially still on. We're doing what we want.
Well, there's got to be some other kind of avenue that DC's thinking of because they're already secondary in the market. You know what I mean?
Digital. Like, it's got to be digital.
You think so?
I do. I feel like they can collect more money. I mean, this seems stupid because I think they're
from digital.
No, from print. They can. They're going to make more money per book than they would otherwise, I would assume, because the distributors are going to make more money. The ones that get screwed in this whole thing are the retailers. They're the ones that, because shit rolls downhill, the book is already set at $3.99, and they're paying higher prices on these comics, and they still got to sell them for that cover price, so they're going to get less money ultimately. So now they're going to be less incentivized to make sure that their shelves are adequately stocked with DC books because it's just not worth it for them as much as it is to carry Marvel or Image or whatever.
When do you think comics are going to die?
I don't
know.
5 years?
10 years?
I don't think they're going to die, but they're going to become more and more and more specialized. It feels like a non-evolving medium.
It seems like at some point, if you're going to read comics, it's going to be digital. It's going to have to be online.
Yeah, I was reading something recently where like the average age of a baseball fan is like
40 years old.
No, it's like 58. And like 5 years ago or something like that, it was like 54. So it's just getting older and older. And I feel like comic book fans are very much the same.
Yeah, that's bonkers about the, I mean, like it sounds crazy that like the average age of baseball fans keeps getting older, but it makes complete sense.
Like, because baseball is also kind of a non-evolving sport that just doesn't align with the interests and sensibilities of today's youth. It needs to be faster. It needs to be flashier.
It's
same
like
with
the,
comics. Comics,
you know,
are
the,
just
the creation of, you know, early 20th century movies that are way more slow paced and relaxed and like. My entire life, I've heard, you know, arguments for baseball. You don't have a clock. The game just plays itself. And I think that's fucking stupid. I'm like, put a fucking clock on it. Like, I don't want to be at the fucking ballpark for 4.5 hours because someone keeps hitting foul balls for 30 minutes. Stop it. Stop it. Like, you get a full count, and then you get two more foul balls, and then take your fucking base. Like, I like baseball. I like baseball, but I think baseball needs to run on a clock system. I think we need to get down to a streamlined game, a faster game. I didn't mean to turn this into how do we fix the MLB But I'm way more interested in how do we fix the MLB than we are.
The difference here is there are going to be comics this
dying.
Year.
Yeah. So, Ian, when you stepped out, I said, Matt, what time? I said, when are comics going to die? And he was like, because that's the trajectory we're going down. You know, like
they're not going to die, but the printed medium is going to become so fucking specialized. I feel like it's going to get to be like what records are today.
Maybe. Because it's weird. It's this weird, divergent path of the source material and the pop culture phenomenon, which is superheroes. So,
do we agree? That that pop culture phenomenon, that bubble will burst at some point. It feels like it's inevitable. It's got to. Like Westerns, eventually, that bubble burst.
Maybe, but I don't know, because I feel like the smart writers keep reinventing and changing and twisting comic book stories, and their comic books isn't just superheroes.
Yeah,
like
I know,
that's
Ian,
the underlying thing is right. That like comic books are so many other things besides just standard capes and tights. So
agreed, but the superhero stuff's really the phenomenon with Walking Dead as the outlier. But I think, and here's the reality, man, we haven't had in cinema a follow up really to like what's Marvel gonna do ever since Endgame. Once you get rid of all the heavy hitters, like what is it really going to look like?
It was last year, dog. Like you are correct, but it was only a year ago.
Right, it was, but we don't know.
The follow-up is something that's totally different, which is Joker, which captivated not only moviegoers and popcorn lovers everywhere,
right,
but the critics.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The
but
Academy,
that's also
like
that's
a
one-off,
dude.
Not falling under Matt's idea of what a comic book movie is,
I guess, but it's so based on a quintessential comic book
character.
Right,
but that kind of thing,
like,
I don't think is the kind of thing that is going to keep the
trajectory
going.
Right, that's like, what if Joker's not the Joker? What if Joker is a crazy guy in clown makeup that accidentally starts a riot?
It's impossible for us to say because we're too close to it right now.
I think,
like, we don't know because there hasn't been another Marvel movie really since.
Right. We don't know, but I think the more reasonable answer to it is it's going to be another really good Marvel movie. How many times during the trajectory of all these Marvel movies have we seen solicitations for something where we're like, this is where it jumps the shark. This is where the wheels fall off.
How hard
and then
did
it
we
comes
shit
out,
on Guardians of the Galaxy?
And then it comes out and we're like, oh my God, that was really good. At some point, that's going to stop happening. It just... Law of averages, at some point that's going to stop happening. But it hasn't happened so far. So I'm not so sure that just the trajectory they're going in, you know, we saw Endgame, we saw Far From Home, that they're not going to be able to just... I think they're probably going to be able to get some good stuff. Well, James Gunn's coming back for Guardians 3. I think that's going to be a knockout.
So here's the thing that we're really not talking about is... This doesn't really have anything to do with
comic books,
or superheroes,
Major League Baseball.
No. Well, it definitely doesn't have anything to do with that. But comic books or superheroes, because this has more to do with the movie industry and IP than anything else. Because comic books are one of the richest, deepest backbenches of a character that you can have, because you've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if you're lucky, thousands of stories written by all these different writers to really create this rich foundation of these comic book characters. So you can pick and choose from any story from now, the 80s, the 70s, 60s, 50s, whatever you want to do with a comic book character. So it has all this stuff that you can go back and mine, and it's safe as fuck. And that is what I'm really keying on. Comic books are IP that from now until the end of time are going to kind of be safe, because there are so many stories that you can pick up, and it has a built-in audience like almost like nothing else, where you can have a book series like Harry Potter. What's the max that you can go with a book series? You know, 9 books or something like that. Spider-Man has 1,000 fucking comic books. So movie studios and big conglomerates like Warner Brothers and Paramount and whoever else has these properties, they want to latch themselves onto a safe thing that has a built-in audience. And I don't see any other thing comparing with that coming up on the horizon. Are there a lot of movies out there that have original ideas? I don't see any of those coming up.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of what you said, but I'm not sure that that's what I was talking about. Like,
you're talking about the comic book bubble bursting.
Yeah. I don't think that movies and media about that kind of shit's going to go away, but the phenomenon that it is right now, the popularity, the cultural event nature of it, I think will die. Not completely, but it'll die down.
Comic conventions were super cool for super cool kids for a minute.
And then we started going
over
to
the last year or so. We started to see it fall back into.
That's just us, though, man.
The nerdiest.
We're very close to it.
But the I do think that there are significant potential ramifications of DC abandoning Diamond in favor of these other distributors on comic books.
Yeah, I agree.
And this could be the beginning of potentially the end of printed books as we know them. Maybe I'm hyperbolizing the situation. I don't know. But if there was going to be something to shake it up, since I've been reading comics, I can't point to anything that's like this.
Right, but very close to when you started reading comic books was another thing that did shake it up, which is the invention of the direct market.
Right, but
so maybe
but
this is like a similar
maybe, but
shockwave.
Man, comics were entering a very unique time then. The healthiest, I mean, it was short-lived, but it was the healthiest time that they were ever going to experience, whereas now they're coming out of a period where nobody was selling comic books for 2 months. Like, there are some stores that didn't survive being shut down for that long.
Well, I'm not saying
it's going to be
the same thing. I'm just saying maybe this is the next evolution. And sometimes evolution changes it and you're lesser then.
Right. Well, my prediction ultimately is what this is going to lead to is more of a digital revolution. I think that for the actual comic book creators, the artists, the writers, and the companies that publish the books, DC, Marvel, and the like, those are the ones that probably want digital because then there's more money for them. They don't have to pay printing costs, distribution, shipping, all that stuff. They don't have to take a loss on anything for the retail market. Like, no, they're just going to make $2.99 on a book. And that's it.
Well, I also think that there are a lot of creators out there that love the craft and love the physical nature and love making comics and love seeing the printed piece and sweat and over what kind of paper stock.
And that's what's going to keep the vinyl revolution going.
Right, right. It will be different, but I think it will still continue.
This is total speculation, but I would guess that within the next 10 years, it's going to be 80% digital.
Maybe. I don't know. There's still a lot of people that I talk to that are comic book fans that are also tech people that don't really buy comics digitally. They just don't. They go to the shop, they buy their physical comics, they like having the catalog.
I get it.
I mean, that's most people. I'm an outlier where I'm like, I don't have any space. Like, unless it is a special book or a absolute edition, I'm probably not buying it physically anymore.
I get that too.
I've been fighting with myself to get another long box recently. And I don't want to do it. Like, I would rather sit down and knock out like a Saturday morning determining what I'm selling back to comic shops, because I don't want to have any more shit here. Like, yeah. But
I just like ease of use. I like if we're sitting here talking and I'm like, ah, shit, what was that issue? I can go on my iPad. I can pull it up and I can look at it right here. I don't have to run home. And I have tons of sentimental value for all of the comic books that I own. I love them. Right. I really do.
But Ian, here's the thing. The people that you're talking about that like still like the printed book, those are the 58-year-old baseball fans. You know what I mean?
Nope.
Like,
I understand.
If comic books are going to grow, obviously it's going to be with the younger generations. What do you think they're going to prefer?
Absolutely.
Probably the screen, right?
Yeah. Because that's how, Matt, and we were talking about this, that's how illustrators are creating their comic books to be seen anyway, with the bright, vibrant colors that jump right off the screen.
So, anyway, should be interesting, Paul, I think. Yeah, for sure. But we don't know how this is going to shake out.
We really don't. Like, I expect Major League Baseball to be around for the long haul. I don't know how this is going to shake out. I think there's some really good players coming up through the system. Some really good energetic personalities coming up through the systems that may energize the game. But Ian, you know, management and team ownership is really what keeps the system down. It's Bob Nutting and it's Diamond Comics distributors keeping the system down. We didn't come on this podcast to talk about the future of Major League Baseball.
We absolutely didn't. You know what puts me to sleep? Just like video games do to you, Paul. And,
oh, Major League Baseball's your kryptonite.
Transformers for Matt. Holy shit. Here's the difference. I can talk baseball. I probably can talk baseball better than
Ian,
both of you.
You can talk anything. You are the biggest bullshitter I've ever fucking known.
But I know about shit. You sat here and challenged me about the Capital Cities thing, but fuck you, because I happened to remember it and learned about it before.
I didn't say that derisively. I meant it complimentary. You can complimentarily.
My tongue just died.
I think I said it right the first time. Complimentarily.
I was just trying to keep up.
You can slide...
I do know about baseball. I do.
Like a fucking snake anywhere. You can slip in and out of any smooth and rough conversation. Any way
slider.
You want. Because you're an intelligent man. And you've got moves. You've got slick moves. Like, you're the only person I'd never, ever trust. Because you're so slick.
That's
you're
amazing.
Too slick. This is years.
What a compliment.
Tell you that you're full of shit.
I am.
Hey,
so untrustworthy.
Very quickly, before we move on, I wanted to read just a couple comments from retailers about how they're feeling about this move of DC.
Mm-hmm. DC Washington Nationals baseball, yes?
The timing of this is terrible and shows a blatant disregard for concerns of comic sellers, said Benny Ray of Atomic Books in Baltimore. So I say this as a lifelong DC Comics fan as well as a retailer. Screw you, DC Comics. I wish them every bit as well as Marvel did when they did this back in the 90s. Whoever is calling the shots at DC, if there is anyone, should be sacked immediately.
Well, first of all, he's from Baltimore.
A couple more. I just don't have a respectful comment, said Brett Parks, owner of 3 Sailfish Comics locations in Winston, Salem, Greensboro, and Concord, North Carolina. I can't think of anything useful or positive about this. I just wish DC would go away or fire their sales team and start over. And then lastly, I like this one. They're handling this about as well as Captain Hook being a proctologist, said Ryan Seymour of Comic Town in Columbus, Ohio. Hey. There has been no transparency or heads up, and at times it has felt like we have been lied to.
Captain Hook still has a regular hand that's deft and gentle and delicate.
Is that what you need to be a proctologist?
I certainly don't want you ramming a fucking hook into my asshole. But if you've got lithe fingers,
right? Like on the sign,
absolutely. That's what I want.
Right, right. On the sign outside of the proctology building, it says "deft fingers."
No, it says "Dr. Hook." Don't worry, we'll use the other hand.
Paul, what's the other thing we're talking about tonight?
We at some point we got into talking about modern cartoons, recent cartoons. So we watched 12 minutes of one of the new Looney Tunes shorts. Ian, is this going to be on HBO Max? The full run of cartoons?
Yep, that's what we watched it on tonight. Currently, there are 10 episodes. It looks like they're each about 12 minutes long, so little bite-sized joints.
These are new cartoon shorts.
Yeah, 12 minutes long. We got two quotes, full episodes with maybe like a 30-second like one-off joke in the middle. I gotta tell you, I went in very skeptical, but we did a lot of laughing during the 12 minutes. Like, this shit kind of delivered.
Yeah, man, it was kind of heartwarming to put it on, and I think that we all had sort of our guards up. And as soon as it was playing and rolling and all three of us were laughing and chuckling, like laughing hard too, I think that the jokes really hit the animation style, which is a classic 2D comedy style or cartooning style. I thought it was really good. It had a lot of hints of old classic Looney Tunes animation, a little bit of a mix of some Ren and Stimpy aesthetic. Like, whoever's animating these definitely was a fan of that kind of cartooning back in the early 90s.
Well, I don't think it was necessarily the signature animation that was the callback to Ren and Stimpy, but there were a handful of cutaways to different scenes.
To different, like, hardcore painted.
Yes, and there were
stills.
Some of the zoom-ins, like where you see, you know, the blood vessels in the eyes and, you know, the texture on the fingers.
Yeah.
A couple of those that they called back. And the first time it happened, Ian, you immediately called out, "This feels like Ren and Stimpy." And I was like, oh, this is what they're doing. They're just like picking from other old school animation. But as it went through, it still retained some Looney Tunes staples.
And the thing about Ren and Stimpy artwork is that it is a callback to old-fashioned cartoon animation
style.
Yeah,
just to me, it just felt like old Looney Tunes.
So when I think of Ren and Stimpy, the first thing I think of are all those super gross close-ups where, like, you know, Stimpy's eating something and he thinks it's gross, and it's like you're in his mouth and you see teeth and gums and green, and like you see all of the shit. Yeah. And we didn't get that kind of detail in this, but I feel like Ren and Stimpy pushed that. I don't remember seeing any of that kind of thing in Looney Tunes.
I think of over exaggeration. So even whenever Yosemite Sam rips his shirt off and he's just, I mean, fucking shredded, that to me felt like a over-exaggeration in the style of Ren and Stimpy, which also is a callback. All the stuff in Ren and Stimpy is all classic 1950s animation.
That kind of thing to me felt more like Looney Tunes than Ren and Stimpy. The same with whenever... So, you know, Bugs and Yosemite Sam are arm wrestling, and Bugs shows up behind him, and he's like, "Hey, who are you fighting over there? You winning?" And that was 100% immediately classic Looney Tunes. But then when you flip the camera back to see who Yosemite Sam's arm wrestling, it's a stick of dynamite, And I'm like, oh, well, that's pure Looney Tunes. But then I feel like they took it a step further and twisted it. Because Yosemite Sam sees it and he's like, oh, this rabbit turned into a stick of dynamite. And then he talks to the rabbit he was just talking to. And the whole rabbit is made of dynamite. And it's so fucking silly. It's so goofy. But I thought it worked so well.
I agree.
I agree, too.
The first episode was Porky Pig Daffy Duck adventure. They're going to the hidden temple of the monkey bird. I don't know how... One of the first thoughts I had was, I don't know how much a modern audience is going to relate to, like, early 20th century, like, Indiana Jones style, like, exploring the Aztec to find, you know, some weird temple.
I think exploring, like, I don't know, is pretty how much classic that, shit, right?
Yeah, and I may be overthinking it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that's going to play, but, man, it played really well, because they both go into the temple, and someone's like, oh, there's certainly going to be traps, and they trip every trap. Daffy trips every trap.
Purposefully and gleefully.
Not purposefully.
I think ignorantly.
Ignorantly. Ignorantly. And holy shit, it was so funny. And the comedic timing of it kept going, because, like, you knew everything that was going to... Like, it happened once, it happened twice, and you're like, okay, I get the bit. And then it kept going, but it kept going interestingly enough with different bits that it was really fucking funny through the entire thing.
Uh-huh.
And to the point where I'm like, is this for me? Like, is this going to be something that in 6 months I'm like, oh, they shouldn't have canceled that? Or is it something that today's kids are really going to latch onto and understand, like, the complexity of the joke telling, and, like, even the little nods to earlier in the story where Daffy gets bit by a snake, and then later on the snake is the Reverend in a wedding.
Well,
which
I
was
think
so fucking funny. It was that was my favorite bit of the whole 12 minutes.
I think that all of that. So we're leaning on some of the things that were making us laugh really hard were all the, like, explicit violence that was happening, which is classic, you know, Looney Tunes, Tom and Jerry. That's what's funny in cartoons. And they didn't shy away from that.
Oh,
Porky Pig got
certainly not
annihilated.
I love when he turned into, like, a
ham. A leg of ham. And that's the beauty of Looney Tunes, because, like, you can do those visual gags where, like, an entire pig just becomes a fucking Christmas ham.
Like, I loved in the Yosemite Sam one where it's an arm wrestling competition, and first you see this random cowboy, and Yosemite Sam, like, just, like, puts his arm through the table, murders his arm to the point where his arm falls off into a little arm coffin. It was brilliant.
Coffin.
It's
the
great. It's just such a great storytelling.
It makes
and
me
want to
write for them. I feel like it would, being in that writer's room would be like the best time of your whole life.
It sounds like it, because it, like, at some point when they're working this out, someone's like, no, listen, he breaks his arm off and it falls into a tiny coffin.
Like, it was so fucking funny.
It worked so great.
We were speculating before we started, like, who is this for? Is this going to be a kid's show, or what? Is it more for, like, a throwback for people like us? And after watching it, I think a kid could enjoy it. I just don't think that those sensibilities are going to appeal to the kid in 2020 as much as they appeal to the kid in me and you, Ian and Paul. And I do feel like it's for an older audience, not because it's too mature. I just think the sensibilities are different.
Yeah, I think you might be right. When you first said that before we watched it, I was like, oh, what are you saying? But I think the comedic pacing, the kind of jokes, but is it one of those things where there some of the jokes are higher brow and some of the jokes are lower brow, and some of the things we appreciate more as...
I don't think there was a whole lot of highbrow to it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, not really.
There was
was
just a style that we liked. It didn't have to be too smart. It really wasn't that fucking smart. A guy gets his arm broken in an arm wrestling competition and it falls into a casket. That's not highbrow humor, but there was something about it that appealed to us immensely. I just feel like an 11-year-old would be like, all right, put on Ben 10.
Maybe. I don't know. None of us here have children. So, McSauce Nation, I know some of you guys out there have the curse of having children. Let us know. Do your kids like Looney Tunes? Do you have HBO Max? Set your Rugrats in front of the television, for God's sake, and give us the research and feedback that we need.
I am so curious to hear if kids are into it or not. Ian, I did not sign up for HBO Max, but we were talking about it last week. After 2 weeks ago, we were all shitting on it, and I was like, no way, no way. Then you were kind of giving us an early review of your impressions of the streaming service.
And then we watched 12 minutes of Looney Tunes, and we all signed up immediately.
Man.
Is this going to be the thing that makes you...
I'll tell you this.
Do it.
If I can purchase those episodes, on iTunes, I may do that. But if the only way to get them is through the streaming service, I don't know.
Part of me is like, did we just watch the creme de la creme of episodes?
We're going to find out.
We're going to find out in 2 minutes here when we watch the entire season.
Did these episodes just happen to cater to the kind of violent comedy that the violent, absurd comedy that really makes all of us laugh? Is the whole series going to be like this?
I mean, I can look at these screenshots of the episodes and tell you that episode 8, where Porky and Daffy Duck are in the bathtub together, is going to be amazing, and I'm going to laugh my nuts off.
Do we want to watch one and then come back and wrap up the episode?
Sure, we can do that.
All right, let's do it. We just finished up season 1, episode 2 of the HBO Max Looney Tunes, and I went in with some trepidation. I think we all did. We really liked season 1, episode 1. I didn't expect season 2 to deliver the quality that it did. I really liked it. I don't know if I'm going to pay for HBO Max for these Looney Tunes apps, but man, I really fucking like these.
Yeah, I think the Bugs Bunny episode, what was that one called? Anybody remember?
Episode 2, part 1.
Ironically enough, very baseball themed heavy.
Right,
which seems
right.
to be the running theme of this show tonight.
Well, you know what? We love the old MLB on the McSauce podcast. Yeah, he can't get reception on his underground rabbit hole TV, so the closest place is the Mad Scientist's castle. He goes up to the Mad Scientist's castle to watch the baseball game, and madness ensues, including Gossamer, the big red monster, and who I think was the quiet star of the episode, the Mad Scientist, who has kind of a really deep lispy kind of voice.
Big League Beast is the name of that episode.
There you go. That's the one.
Really cool episode, man. That the Mad Scientist. I feel like he is an old Looney Tunes character.
Possibly, maybe.
He definitely looked the part.
Feels like a very a Peter Lorre style kind of character.
Yeah.
This stuff has been really, really eye-opening that they've kept so much of the old core of Looney Tunes intact, and the fact that we're all sitting here, we're watching it, we're cracking up, and laughing out loud, genuinely belly laughing at this stuff. I mean, it speaks to the writing. It speaks to just how Looney Tunes has always spoke to, and you know, kids and the kids in us right now.
And that's part of my question to, like, how long is this going to last? Because I don't know what, like, I've seen shows that I expect to be geared to a younger audience that I think are stupid. I don't think they're funny. I don't think they're enjoyable in any way. But I think these Looney Tunes cartoons are so funny. And I don't know if it's because maybe the writers and the voice actors are really just making them like the old Looney Tunes, which is something we all grew up with. Or if this is something that's, they're taking it to another level that's going to translate to a new audience.
Yeah, I think this is mostly going to appeal to nostalgia. I think there's a certain sensibility to this humor.
You mean the brutality?
Yes.
But kids everywhere love brutality. Am I right?
But like,
shaves himself to death in this last episode.
Who hasn't been there?
But then he's reborn in a toilet. Like, that has to be generational. Like, everyone understands. That has to be funny to everyone. Being reborn in a toilet. A toilet is...
It's relatable, it's universal. To everybody being reborn in a toilet.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah, these couple episodes we watched tonight. Man, I really didn't expect them to hit as hard as they did, but they're really good. And you know what? The McSauce podcast, I don't think the McSauce podcast audience is the tween to mid-teen demographic. So I think the demographic that we know that we're hitting, go watch some of these new HBO Max Looney Tunes episodes.
I challenge you not to laugh.
They're great. Cool, man. Like, there's some there's some certainly goofy stuff, but a lot of the goofy stuff makes them really good. These are cool episodes. I fully endorse HBO Max Looney Tunes.
It's enough that I might do it. I might pull the trigger. I don't know. I'm gonna think about it.
Maybe we'll just take Ian's parents' password. That's going to do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Matt Cassell.
We'll see you next time.
You're supposed to say...
That's all, folks.